This is Leafs Lunch Playoff Edition with Julia Tesheri and Michael DeStefano on TSN 1050. The playoffs live here.
Down the left wing, centers the puck. Daniel shoots, he scores!
What do you say? The Twins have come to play!
Comes in on the long go. To the backhand. Oh, what a ball save! Oh, that glove is magic from Roberto!
To run into Bolshemin. Fisher sent it behind. Chipper out there. Score! Three tackles and a second to go!
By Simmons and a touch the fires.
The point again, Carlson. Alfredson, his shot. Scores! Number 400 wins it for Daniel Alfredson.
Henrik, back to Daniel. Takes a slap shot and scores! You couldn't have written a better ending if you found it in a storybook.
Welcome to Leafs Lunch. I'm Mike DeStefano, a.k.a. Al's brother. We got Frank Corrado filling in for Julia Tesheri today and for the rest of the week. And we just heard a terrific montage of all of the athletes who were just inducted. Or I guess they got the call to the hall. The induction will take place a little bit later on in the year. But they got the call to the hall, and five new members will be joining the Hall of Fame, three of which former teammates of yours truly, Frank Corrado, the Sedin brothers, and Roberto Luongo.
Crazy, man. Like, I woke up, you know, thinking about that news, and I was very grateful for the fact that I got to share the ice with three guys who are being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I got to make passes with these guys, shoot on them in practice, ride the plane, go to the hotels, all these things. And so, you know, when you kind of you grow up thinking, oh, I'd love to play in the NHL, but then when you actually do it and then you get to share the same space as these kind of players, it's it puts things into perspective about how, you know, how unique and how cool it is to actually live out that dream.
The word unique to me is especially interesting when we talk about the Sedins, because there was some people out there who look at the Sedins and they say, not sure if they should have been first ballot. And more so, I think more people looked at Daniel and said, not sure if he should have made it in
there.
I'm with you, man. Yeah. I thought they're first ballot guys, 100% deserving of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But the uniqueness of the Twins, the uniqueness of their career. I mean, there could be an entire 30 for 30 on their draft day. Like, just Brian Burke putting in work.
Absolutely.
Somehow trading away. Like, he got, what, three or four trades in the top five that day, yeah, just to go from, like, one to five to four. Ends up getting picks two and three and takes them. Daniel at two, Henrik at three. They stick with the Canucks their entire careers. Don't win a cup, but go on to have Hall of Fame careers.
And just like, you can talk about their accomplishments on the ice, which we're going to get to here, but you talk about guys who are just the most professional, like just the best people to be around, took care of everyone in the locker room, really. You know, just it's hard to come up with enough great things to say about them. Like, you run out of things to say. They're incredible people. And, you know, and I think maybe in this market as well, we think about the 2011 playoffs, but leading up to the 2011 playoffs, they were having some monster years. They were scoring highlight reel goals year after year, and so it was always a treat to watch them play.
Well, what's you? Because you have firsthand knowledge, right? You got to watch these guys, and you've played with plenty of superstars. I mean, you played with Sidney Crosby, one of the greatest of all time, for Pete's sake. But what was it about playing with the Sedins, and even Roberto Luongo, who you got to play with a little bit as well? Like, what was it about them that made them special? Man. And you sat there and say, yeah, these guys are definitely going to be in the Hall someday.
I could tell you, like, my very first training camp when I was 18 years old, and we've talked about this before, you and I, but we did a 2-on-1 drill, and this was a little bit of like a, you want to call it, welcome to the NHL moment for me. Like, I'm taking a 2-on-1 drill against these guys, and I'm looking up, it's like, it's Henrik and Daniel. I go, oh boy, here we go. And I'm 18, and I'm like a string bean, 185-pound guy with like a stick that's too long and like just a flimsy arms everywhere. And I think it was Henrik that just put the most beautiful saucer pass right over my stick. And when I tell you, I didn't even have a chance at stopping this, like, it didn't even, not even close, and it landed right on Danny's tape for a one-timer. And the thing that was so crazy about it as a player was, like, I didn't even see him release the puck from his stick when he sauced it over.
Like the pass?
Yeah, I didn't even see it coming. Sometimes you can see guys angle their stick a certain way, and you know, you can see that it's coming because, you know, they have to change the angle of the puck. No. This was just, and then the other thing was they were very strong on the puck. So, like, if you're ever doing battle drills against these guys, they had a way of protecting the puck and shielding the puck. And next thing you know, it's like between your legs, it's under your stick. And it was just, they could make the best defensemen look really silly in practice. And
they did a lot of times, and, not just in practice.
They did it in games as well. Like, yeah, absolutely. We're talking about guys like, you know, the between the legs pass to the between the legs goal. I think you know which one I'm talking about against the Calgary Flames, but there's just so many instances with these guys. And another thing too, Al's brother, like, they led the charge in fitness testing every year, and I don't know if people would know that from early on in their careers. I think they had a tendency or a perception that they were a little overweight. And I have a feeling I heard a story about this when I was in Vancouver. There was just one year where they came back and they were machines.
It was after the lockout,
right?
So they came back after the 05 lockout,
okay,
and then they just took off.
Yeah,
it's like 8 years they dominated
it.
The
was
NHL.
It was like one of those things where every test in training camp was won by one of them, and and if it was Danny that won, Henrik was pissed, and if it was Henrik that won, Danny was pissed. And I remember the one year that I was there with Torts had us do a 2 mile run at the BC Lions stadium there. I think it's called BC Place.
Yeah.
And so we did the 2 mile run there, and you had to do a 6 minute mile. So I think I was fine. I was like a 6 minute mile, maybe six and change, which is like just over 12 minutes. I think that's a decent score. They were under, and they were like neck and neck photo finish. Like, that's how crazy it was. And I think actually Mike Santarelli was up there with them the whole time. And at one point there was talk about them going back and re-racing because Santo wanted a piece of them. Like, he wanted to beat them. So like that. And so when you talk about good leaders.
Others.
Yeah. And you talk about good leaders, like, that's what they were. They were the kind of guys who pushed each other, but they also pushed everyone into the fight with them. And, you know, it sucks they never got to win a Stanley Cup. My personal opinion, they got robbed in 2011. I think that was their cup to win, but life goes on. They you know, incredible legacy, incredible careers, and incredible people.
You look at this entire class and the four, you know, NHLers that are getting inducted, Alfredson and Luongo, to add to the Twins. Zero cups between them.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen too often when you look at an entire class of NHLers and there's zero Stanley Cups.
It's the ultimate team sport, man. Like, you can talk about how teams have superstars, teams have Hall of Famers, but there's
look
just...
Look at the Leafs, for example. I mean, they've got a couple of guys that looks like they're on their way to potentially being Hall of Famers, and what success have they had?
Right.
Right? Yeah. So, but yeah, the Sedin brothers, man, like, I remember even the way that it ended, like the final home game.
Isn't that perfect? Isn't that perfect way ending for them?
Dude, you didn't have to be a Canucks fan to have chills run down your spine watching that game. Like, Daniel Sedin scores his 22nd goal of the season at the 33-second mark, assisted by his brother, number 33, Henrik Sedin, the second period.
Yeah.
And then he scores the overtime winner at 233 in overtime, which also set like a new Canucks overtime goals record. I think it was like his seventh goal or something like that. There was so many weird like incidents, coincidental, you know, records or timing things. It was just so storybook. It was incredible. And the final goal was assisted by his brother Hank, and then obviously Alex Edler, who was with them pretty much for most of their run throughout their career. A guy you would have played with as well.
Yeah.
But Roberto Luongo also, like, getting in there, part of that team.
Bobby Lou.
Captain for a year?
Yeah, he was the captain. He was the captain.
I was reminded of that yesterday.
Yeah.
Weird thing about Roberto Luongo. So I was looking through, seeing, you know, all the accomplishments and everything that he did. You know, fourth all-time in wins with 489. Second all-time in games played with over 1,000. 77 shutouts. Is Roberto Luongo the greatest goalie to never win a Vezina?
Well, Henrik Lundqvist would be up there for me as well.
So you'd be taking... He never won a Vezina, Lundqvist?
Oh, sorry. I thought you
Vezina.
Said Stanley Cup. Sorry, buddy.
Vezina.
To never win a Vezina. Oh, yeah, sorry. I don't know why I thought you said Stanley Cup. It's been a long week.
He's been a three-time finalist, but never actually won one. There was one year, his first season in Vancouver, he was second for the Hart that year, and also second for the Vezina.
Yeah, that's
somehow Marty Brodeur ended up sweeping in and stealing the Vezina on the guy.
But even like 77 career shutouts and a 919 career save percentage. 919 for your career, you're talking about your early years where you might have been, well, not for him because he was really good early on.
Right, but, at the gate.
You know, like your early years where you're just trying to get a hold of the league, and then your later years where you're trying to hang around. Like, this guy was a pillar of consistency. And another thing, too, is the workload for him. He played a ton of games. It feels like when he was playing in Florida, he was, you know, game after game after game, you know, 40 shots a night. Like, that's what I remember about his first go around in Florida. It's like, this is the most overworked, overrun goalie in the league, and he's still one of the best goalies in the league. And then his time in Vancouver, just an absolute workhorse year after year, and then putting in, you know, work in the playoffs, getting his team to, you know, win rounds and be in the mix in the playoffs. So, you know, you talk about, and then wins gold in 2010 with Team Canada. So he was, you know, such a competitor, such a workhorse as a goaltender.
Yeah, that's my, obviously my favorite Roberto Luongo memory is that 2010 gold medal team and, you know, winning that in his home building, right? Right in Vancouver, yeah. In the same building that they went on to have great success in later on that season, going to a cup final. But you talk about that workload, dude. From 2003 to 2008, he played 72 games, 75 games, 76
Could
games.
Could you imagine?
73 games.
That would never happen now.
Not a chance.
Never happen.
And nowadays, it's tough to get a guy to play 60 games, let alone
60's a big number now.
65, 70.
It really, yeah, the guys that are playing 60 games are like the big workhorses in the league.
Well, I'm pretty sure one of those years, and Steph, you may be able to help me out there, he was with Noodles for one of those seasons, I believe. Maybe it was a little earlier. But I'm pretty sure the reason why Noodles is such a great color analyst is because he barely had to play. He sat on the bench the whole time and had a chance to basically do color in his own head watching the games because he never had to play.
Yeah.
I'm convinced of it.
You think so? If you're a Noodler and you're sitting there on the bench, are you doing color? Or are you doing play-by-play? Or are you doing a little bit of both?
Maybe a little bit of both.
Also, producer Steph just texting in, Cujo, one of the best goalies to never win a Vezina.
Yeah. He's another guy up there who didn't get the call to the Hall yesterday, but I think at some point Cujo...
It would be nice
I think
to
Cujo
see
will get in there. He's up there in terms of like all-time numbers too.
Yeah.
So I think he'll get in there
and
at
then
one
speaking
point.
Of Cujo, one of his fiercest competitors from back in the early 2000s, Leaf fans' favorite getting into the Hall, Daniel Alfredsson. What do you think about that, AB?
Yeah, Danny Alfredsson getting in there.
Well, you weren't you didn't grow up a big Leafs fan, did you?
Well, Daniel Alfredsson, I mean, I just grew up loving hockey. I mean, I was hugely with the 01-02 run. That's when I became a hockey fan,
right?
And watching the Leafs go on that run, that's what sucked me into the great sport of hockey, was watching that team. My uncle was a massive Leaf fan. He kind of got me into it, and then I kind of bounced around a little bit. But, you know, watching Daniel Alfredsson back then, like, you got to respect what he was.
Absolutely.
And I know a lot of Leaf fans absolutely hate this guy. Like, producer Steph, we were talking about it earlier. She's like, oh, you know, good for him, but ultimately couldn't stand when he was playing.
You'll get that from a lot of Leaf fans. Like myself growing up, I bled blue, man. Biggest Leaf fan, wore my jersey whenever I could, and I couldn't stand Alfredsson. I couldn't stand the whole Ottawa Senators, even that jersey, like everything. I just, you know what I mean? But you have to respect what he did as a player. And I heard a great story about Alfredsson when he was playing in Detroit near the tail end of his career. And
I hate that happened.
I mean, that's a story for a different day. But so anyways, the story was that everyone had kind of left the rink, but I guess guys didn't really put their shower sandals back in their stalls, and the guys left the room a little bit messy, and one of the training staff was left behind and walks into the dry room where we kind of get out of our street clothes and get into our, you know, our hockey gitch or whatever, and everyone was gone, but there's Daniel Alfredsson making sure all the shower sandals are in line, everyone's all neat and tidy, and it's like, this guy doesn't have to be doing that.
No,
like no one really wants to do that stuff, but I think that's the kind of leader he is. It's like, you know, he's there for his teammates, he's there for his guys, and he's just first class all the time.
Yeah, and it's a special class all around. Like, when you look at it, you know, the Sedin brothers, obviously, what they were able to do internationally. And keep in mind, like, this is the Hockey Hall of Fame, not just the NHL Hall of Fame.
Right.
And those guys had great careers at the World Championships. They won
Olympic gold.
Yeah. Same with Daniel Alfredsson. You know, all three of them with over 1,000 points. But, like, the set, there's just, you know, you got the Sedins with their Alfredsson fellow countrymate there going into the hall, and then also their longtime teammate in Roberto Luongo. It's going to be a fantastic.
How cool would that be if you're, you know, the Twins or Bobby Lou, and you're going in with your teammates, your buddies?
Yeah.
Like, and those guys were tight. Like, those three were very tight. They were
that
the same.
That was the backbone of the organization.
Yeah, was like they were the dinner crew together. It was like those three, and I would see them with Bieksa and Burrows. So, sometimes.
Bit.
Yeah, but.
Dude, how much money did those two make Alex Burrows in his career?
Oh, yeah. He's like.
He was on the show today. He was on the morning show today and talked about it. And even he said himself, he's like, I mean, those guys each had 1,000 points in their career. Imagine if they actually played with a first line left winger with them. Like, well, they had Burrows, Tom Pyatt,
I think
good.
Burrows doesn't give himself enough credit.
He's a
good player. It's just a lot of people, you speak. Thinking about people who don't like Alfredson, there's a lot of people that don't like Burrows, but for Burrows, he realized there was an opportunity to play a certain role and play with these guys, and he took full advantage of that. And I think he's, you know, if he lives in a nice big house in the Montreal area, he's probably looking at that house and saying, this is the house that Hank and Danny built. Yeah. Just like I look at my modest Vaughn house and I go, this is the house that Larry Tannenbaum built. Thank you for a year and a half, Larry. I appreciate you.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is funny. A couple other people who are also going into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Finnish women's hockey legend Riikka Salonen also going in. The first female that's not American or Canadian to go into the Hall of Fame. So it's expanding and becoming
cool.
More international, and that's just a testament to how much better the women's game is getting. That now we're seeing recognition of, you know, non-Canadian, non-traditional, I suppose, countries getting represented in the Hall of Fame. So congratulations to her, and then Herb Carnegie getting in there as well in the builder category. Do you have any memories?
Just, you know what, he has the rink, like the rink that's named after him in North York, and that was by far my favorite rink to play at as a kid growing up. Just the way they built that rink, I still even, like, I'll go skate there in the summer sometimes. I just get nostalgia walking in there. I think it's not cookie cutter. It's very unique. You know, you have the stands on one side. The dressing rooms are awesome. I think everything with that rink, and, you know, they obviously pay tribute to him with some displays and stuff like that. So that's the only kind of memory I associate with Herb Carnegie. But, you know, it's obviously, it's one of those things that's long overdue if you talk to anyone who's in the know. Yeah,
yeah.
Historic and that kind of stuff. So congratulations to the family, and it's great to see.
Yeah, to everyone, all five members. We got the call to the hall, something that everybody who gets involved with hockey one day hopes to get, and those five deservedly so will get it, and they'll get inducted later on in the year and in the fall, and can't wait. It's going to be a good ceremony. Let's transition a little bit here into a little bit of Leafs talk, because we had some news come down yesterday. We saw Timothy Liljegren get an extension, 2 years, $1.4 million annually. And he was speaking to the media yesterday after our show, so I want to play a little bit about what he was saying, because we were talking about yesterday. We briefly chatted on it once we saw the news come out and discussed, well, what could his ceiling be? What can he do for Toronto? And he was trying to explain to the media what his plan is and where he feels his game can still improve.
Last year, I improved my offense a little bit, especially the second half of the year. So I'll try to continue on improving that, and then my defensive game as well. You know, be stronger around the boards, pushing guys up, stuff like that. Box outs, I think I struggled with that some parts of the year as well. So just getting stronger and try and improve offense and some details in the defensive zone as well.
So he made massive strides to his game last year, but ultimately was sitting up in the press box for the last few games of the playoffs because the playoffs didn't go as well as he had hoped, right?
Sheldon
he got
Keefe
pushed
said,
around a little bit.
Sheldon Keefe said his inexperience showed.
Right.
That was his quote.
And Tampa's a physical, tough team, and you got to go and you got to win those board battles. You got to win those net front battles.
But here's the thing, Al's brother. every team is like that in the playoffs. Did you watch the Rangers? You watched Colorado?
Yeah.
And the teams that weren't, like, I don't know, Florida didn't impress me. Like, Florida, there you go.
Why they got swept.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. But that's why I think when you listen to Liljegren, like, he understands that. He says, look, I got to get stronger. You know, I got to work better along the boards. I got to be better in front of my own net.
He does.
So at least he's understanding what he needs to do to get right to make sure that he can be an impactful piece when it matters, not be up in the press box next season.
For sure. Here's what I'll say about that. Every hockey player in the history of hockey who goes home for the summer and then gets interviewed says, oh, I got to get bigger, I got to get faster, and I got to get stronger. Just one time I want to see a hockey player say, oh, I actually need to get smarter, right? Because and that's the thing with Liljegren. He's what? Is he 6 feet? 6 foot one?
Yeah,
maybe?
I think he's like 6 foot, just 200 pounds.
And he's maybe 200 pounds?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how big you're getting. That's it. Like you're not gonna be 6'4" next year. You're not gonna have a ginormous wingspan with an 8 foot stick like Chernak or McDonough.
Right.
So what you need to do actually is you need to work out, you need to get fast, you need to get strong, you need to get all those things, but you actually need to get smarter. You actually need to watch some hockey. You need to watch a guy like Ryan McDonough play and understand this guy went to
watch playoff hockey.
Maybe watch some playoff hockey. Like so that's kind of what I think, and I think he's a good player. I think he's, you know, on the right track to being a good NHL player, but maybe his I guess needs to be guided in that direction to say, like, where you struggled this year is understanding the game, understanding the score clock, the time clock, the big moments in the game, the momentum swings in the game. That's where I think he struggled the most. Hey, listen, you can be an undersized player like Sam Girard for Colorado. I know we didn't see him in the playoffs. He's an undersized player, but he knows how to play defense properly, and he doesn't overpower you, but it's up here, man. It's between the ears where he beats guys.
I mean, even Cale Makar's not a giant. He's not an overly big player, right?
He's not like gargantuan like they have on Tampa.
Exactly. Like, he's not Victor Hedman, right? He's not blessed with being 6'4", 225, 230 pounds. But he's strong on his skates, and he knows how to play. He's smart. He positioning is one of the key things that he does really well.
Yeah, and it's funny. So I played in Sweden. Like, I played a full season there, and I got to see their player development model, and it's different than in Canada, for sure. Like, they go on the ice, and there's a bunch of tires, and they do the obstacle courses, and they're so good at it. They skate so well. They handle the puck so well. It's incredible, right? But I thought where the Swedish players lacked a little bit was understanding the game management. And I think that's one of those things where if you're Liljegren and you're going home for the summer now, maybe do a little less of the obstacle course and do a little more like, okay, we saw something in video, now let's get on the ice and let's apply it, right? So, and maybe he will be, I don't know. Like, the people like to post their Instagram videos of themselves training in the summer, but we'll see.
I thought it was a pretty good contract at the end of the day. It was a decent deal, and hopefully he does have another level to get to going into next season.
Yeah.
But as of now, six guys under contract: Riley, Brody, Muzzin, Hall, Gio, Liljegren becoming the latest guy, Rasmus Sandin still left to go. Maybe Dregs might have an update on that. He'll join us on the other side. I'm Mike DiStefano with Frankie Corrado filling in for Julia Teixeira. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
And that's when I thought you ready, what you've been hiding from me.
Welcome back into Leafs Lunch. Mike DiStefano here. Frank Corrado filling in for Julia Teixeira. And on the line, we got Darren Dreger, our TSN hockey insider. Dregs, how are you?
I'm doing well. Just getting a few things done around the house, around the yard that I've been neglecting through the Stanley Cup final.
Well, yeah, I guess now is the time to get it all done. I guess the busy season's over, although you could argue that the busy season and the hard lifting is about to maybe ramp up in a little bit. But before we get into that, why don't we put a bow on the Cup final for you, Dregs? How dominant of a performance was that Cup final run for the Colorado Avalanche?
Well, it turned out to be dominant, right? I mean, the way it started the first two games, especially game two, how many of us thought that was going to be a six-game series? I think that we had a healthy enough respect for the Tampa Bay Lightning, for the recent history of the Lightning, to not believe that a sweep was even in the cards. So you knew there'd be pushback. But the way the Avalanche shielded off in Game 6 was impressive to me. And as our friend and colleague Dave Poulin talked about on SportsCenter, it's almost like, and I've repeated this a few times because it's a good line, it's like Tampa got out-Tampa'd by the Colorado Avalanche in terms of, you know, the detail. There were long stretches through the mid part of that hockey game and a good chunk of the third, too, where Tampa just couldn't get anything going. They couldn't sustain any pressure or time in the offensive zone. And that was just based on the commitment of the Colorado Avalanche. So, you know, they deserve the credit. The players deserve the credit. But Jared Bednar and the coaching staff also deserve a slice of that as well. Because had Colorado lost that game, man, then, yeah, we know it's a pick 'em scenario in Game 7. But I think most of us will also think that then it shifts the momentum heavily in favor of Tampa Bay, given their level of experience.
Dregs, I don't know if you experienced this, you know, covering hockey, but it seems like every year there's a new cup champion and then everyone else is following a new philosophy with their teams, right? Like, we got to do what they're doing. And do you think we're going to see that, you know, next year? Or do you think teams look at it and say, like, you know what, we actually don't have the weapons Colorado has. We're just going to stick to what we do and we're going to make our own, I guess, path to the Stanley Cup?
I think it's the latter, Frankie. You know, you played on good teams, and the recipe for success is always similar, right? You need high-quality goaltending, you need top defense, and you better be good up the middle of the ice as forwards. And the teams that don't have top centers are always looking for top centers, and likewise for number one defense or top-pairing guys. And look at the market right now in terms of the goaltending area and how weak that seems to be for Toronto and others, right? So I think that becomes more of the focus because, as Gabe Landeskog said, you know, as part of the celebration, you know, after the Game 6 win, when he was asked about the copycat theory, he's like, yeah, good luck trying to find another Cale Makar. And honestly, that's sort of what it boils down to. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say that Colorado has every piece of the puzzle, but you know what? Darcy Kuemper deserves some credit, too. Goaltending for the Avalanche deserved the credit based on they were good. They didn't have to be great. They were good and gave Colorado, obviously, the opportunity to win. So maybe you can tick that box as well. But to try and chase, I don't think you can do that when you look at the high level of talent that Colorado possesses. But keeping that high level talent in-house on the same team, well, that's going to be a challenge for Joe Sakic and the group there now.
Yeah, there's what, 10 unrestricted free agents, I think, and a lot of them looking to cash in this offseason.
As they should be.
What do you think that's going to look like for them?
Well, it's going to look the same as it looks for all the other teams that are in a similar predicament. You know, you're looking at some impactful pieces, though. You're looking at Nazem Kadri. You're looking at Nichushkin. You're looking at Burakovsky. You're looking at Josh Manson. You know, Andrew Cogliano was a real nice add for Colorado. Terry Lehkonen, clearly. And look, you got to, again, we're passing credit along here because you have to do that for any Stanley Cup champion. But Sakic put it on the line, didn't he? You know, with some of the pieces that he acquired. He gives up on Justin Barron to acquire Terry Lehkonen. I mean, that's a decent return for Arturi Lehkonen, who, when he was with the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, did he strike fear in the hearts of the opposition?
He was a nice player.
He was a nice player. That's what he was. But he fit in beautifully in Colorado. No different than the pieces that fit in, like Nick Paul, with the Tampa Bay Lightning. The difference is Colorado won the Stanley Cup. So the names of the guys that we've just talked about here get elevated. And it goes beyond the free agents that Sakic is going to have to contend with. You know, as of July 1st, he can extend Nathan MacKinnon.
Right.
Not saying he will. He has time on his side. What's that deal going to look like? It'll look like whatever Nathan MacKinnon and Pat Brisson want it to look like. Now, you know, MacKinnon's a good team guy. Maybe he leaves a little bit on the table, but how much is a little bit, and what is that term and deal? You know what the term is going to look like, but what's the AAV going to be? So it's unfortunate that we have to tackle the business side so fresh after the Stanley Cup championship and in the midst of these guys in full celebration mode, as they should be, as they deserve to be. But that's the condensed world that we live in because of the pandemic. And draft is looming, and then free agency right after that.
Dregs, earlier in the series, Jared Bednar was talking about the similarities between them and the Leafs, and, you know, he's watching the Leafs series against Tampa. You know, what can the Leafs learn from this run? And you can take it from any point of view. You can take it from management, coaches, players. Like, what do you think? Like, what do you take from this run if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Some similarities, I think, Frankie. I don't know how you feel on this. You know, goaltending feels like it's going to be a question in Toronto, maybe forever. Certainly moving forward. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to have decent goaltending. I would submit that Jack Campbell is better than a decent goaltender. But they got to get that deal done. And there's certainly no guarantee they're going to be able to do that. He's earned his right to free agency. He wants to take the contract that's out there that pays him the most, gives him the longest term. He deserves that opportunity. He's not a 25-year-old goalie. So we can understand that. But then if it's not Jack Campbell, who is it? And it's going to be a goalie that people are going to wonder about and wonder whether or not this goalie is going to be a difference maker. So that applies to Colorado. It applies to Toronto. Nathan MacKinnon, you know, we all remember that great soundbite he gave us a year ago when he didn't acknowledge Memorial Cups or some of the past championships that he's been on. He was wallowing in disappointment, just gutted that they had lost, and acknowledged that he hasn't won anything. Well, he meant at the pro level, at the NHL level. I'm sure that to some degree, that's how Austin Matthews is starting to feel. Morgan Rielly.
We were hoping so.
Yeah, well, for sure. And look, I mean, the pain and suffering that's required to win the toughest trophy in pro sports to win is real, and it's age old. You know, I'm always reminded of the visuals and hearing the Oilers, you know, from the dynasty years of the 80s talk about how they really didn't know what sacrifice meant until they lost to the Islanders, and they walked by that dressing room and thought that, oh, there's going to be all this grand celebrating and all that, and you see a dozen guys laying outside the dressing room, you know, in the hallway with ice bags and all kinds of stuff because that was the price that the Islanders were willing to pay to win. And maybe you just have to feel that. You have to be through it until you understand what it means. And, you know, we saw the laundry list of significant injuries that, you know, were disclosed now by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they fell just short. But that's how you win back-to-back championships and buy for the three-peat. So we'll see. You know, let's find out. Does Toronto have the maturity or the intestinal fortitude, let alone the pieces, to get to that highest level?
Yeah, I loved the designation. I think it was McDonough. Mangled finger. That's what the designation for me now. Yeah. Mangled finger. In conversation with our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Dregs, there was actually a report from Larry Brooks, the New York Post, yesterday about the Devils having some strong interest in Jack Campbell. Could even try to trade for his rights, potentially. Could you see a scenario where the Leafs, if they aren't close to terms with this guy, maybe try and deal his rights away? And what do you think a deal like that could look like?
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you, right? If you know that you're not going to be able to bridge a gap, whatever that gap is, you might as well try and get something of value in return. Now, if it's New Jersey, I've heard Buffalo, I've heard a couple of other scenarios. I mean, there's no doubt Jack Campbell is going to have an audience. Of course he is. Again, based on what we already know, and that the goalie market isn't real strong, is it? Be it free agency or via trade. You know, it's a curious situation in New Jersey because I think the Devils would love for Mackenzie Blackwood to just wake up one morning and get it. You know, just what it means to just commit to being as good as he can be. But goaltending is a big question in New Jersey, as it is in Buffalo, as it is in Toronto, as it is in Las Vegas, as it is in Edmonton, go around the league. I mean, there's so many questions about that. So who's the highest bidder? If Kyle Dubas is willing to listen, and there's no reason why he shouldn't be, can you get a decent draft pick? Can you get a prospect? Can you get a younger player? You're not going to get a package, but you will get something of value if it gets to that stage.
Dregs, the Leafs announced Timothy Liljegren's deal yesterday, and I feel like it came a little bit out of nowhere. There wasn't really any chatter about it, but that could be because the Stanley Cup playoffs is going on. I want to ask you, so he gets $1.4 million, and when I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, well, you have control over the situation because he doesn't have arbitration. He's a restricted free agent, and we've seen teams in that situation in the past, just be like, here's your 950. This is as good as it's going to get, and you got to take it, right? So what's, I guess, what's the motivation for them to, like, I guess, overpay a little bit on this one?
Well, because I think they believe that he's going to be a real good player for them. And we've seen signs of it. We haven't seen it consistently. And there would be some reservation on that as well. But the player is banking on himself. He thinks that, you know, in a two-year window, he's going to prove that his value isn't just now at 1.4 times two, but it's going to elevate in a hurry. I'm not so sure of that. I looked at it. I actually thought it was fair, to be honest, Frankie. I thought it was fair because you're not buttoned down on a term, and if Liljegren can add that element of consistency to his game, then it might end up looking like a bargain in a year from now.
Right.
It could. And you've got Sandin that you've got to wrestle with. Look, I can tell you that whenever there are trade discussions around the Toronto Maple Leafs, when teams, you know, are kicking tires and looking for what might be available, when it comes to defense, I don't know how many are calling on Timothy Liljegren, with all due respect. But I can tell you that there are a large number of teams that are often inquiring on Rasmus Sandin, right? So anytime Dumas is engaging in a trade conversation that might bring a half-decent or a decent piece to the Toronto Maple Leafs, well, that's the player that teams are often calling about. So to get some of the business done as early as he has, with Mark Giordano, an incredible bargain, and this one being a fair deal in term and money, I thought that's good business.
So let me ask you this then. If Liljegren's at 1.4 on 2 years, what does a Sandin contract look like?
Yeah, it's got to be better than that. And if you're Toronto, you're wanting him for longer than 2 years, right? I mean, you can live with that term on Liljegren because you're not quite sure what he is yet. Not to repeat myself, but you think you have an idea, but are you certain of that? And the answer is no. And I'll give you the reminder, it's Travis Dermott.
Right, you know, right, exactly.
I'm not kicking dirt on Travis Dermott, but I remember when he broke into the National Hockey League, you know, people were tagging him as a potential top four.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it played out.
When he got opportunities to play top four as well.
He 100% did. And that didn't work out for him in Toronto. And I think they see a similar scenario to Liljegren. I think they think that Sandin is can't miss. So I'd be guessing coming up with a number, but I think Toronto would love to get him on a 4 or 5 year. That would be my guess. Not sure the player is invested. And players now, even the restricted free agent guys, as we know, have way more swagger and way more clout than they used to have.
Not me.
Right?
Not me, Drake.
Yeah, you missed the window.
I missed that one, man.
Crazy.
I got the old, well, here's your two-way offer. Take it or don't show up to training camp.
Yeah, you did.
Dregs, I look at the group now, though, I guess, without Rasmus Sandin being signed to a contract, still an RFA with the team, but now they've got six NHL defensemen already. Like, do you think these are the six guys that they roll into next year, and maybe Sandin is another player? Or do you think there's still going to be some sort of tinkering this offseason to that blue line?
Yeah, I mean, tinkering is the right word, Mike, because I don't know that there won't be or that there shouldn't be. You know, it doesn't matter where you feel your strengths are. You're always looking to upgrade or improve. And I still believe, based on the number of calls that I have on a daily basis, that it's going to be active in the next few weeks and then beyond. You know, you just know with the pieces in play, with the draft looming in Montreal, that there's going to be ample activity. Now, Toronto may not be in the eye of the storm because they don't really need to be, but, you know, if there's an opportunity to engage, I'm sure Kyle Dubas is going to do that. Again, how is he getting the goaltender? You know, if he doesn't do it in free agency, well, he's obviously going to have to try and make a trade.
Right.
And could that involve something of more significance? And the answer to that is yes, it could. I'm not expecting it. I'm not speculating that it will. But, you know, anytime you can improve your club, you 100% do it. It's always more comfortable when you're developing within because it's not costing you assets. But given the cap situation the Maple Leafs are in, everything that goes around this club, You know, what are they going to look like up front with Mikheyev and others, you know, doing new ticket, all of that. I mean, how can you possibly rule out anything Leaf-related? I don't think you can.
Dregs, I found this a little curious, and you were reporting about Barry Trotz and the Winnipeg Jets and how there was some interest from the Jets' point of view, but I think Trotz wants to, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but spend some time with his family, take a little more time before he makes a decision. So where do the Jets go from here in their coaching search?
Yeah, they're in it right now, Frankie. They're in a week of second interviews and expanding their interview roster, if you will. Winnipeg was deeply disappointed from ownership down that Barry Trotz made the decision that he did, but they respect it, right? I mean, they know that, you know, his father is elderly, so he's spending time with him in Manitoba. You know, he's got family in the United States. He's got a place in BC. You know, so he's been grinding for decades now. So he has an opportunity, and he will be paid by the Islanders for one more year. So he's got the luxury of taking his time. And he told me in a conversation late last week, as the news was breaking, that the fire just isn't burning yet. And, you know, that's the character of Barry Trotz. He wasn't going to accept a wonderful opportunity in Winnipeg unless it was something that he knew he was going to dive headfirst into and give it his all. So if you're not feeling that, and he isn't at the moment, then you've got to be honest and push away. And that's exactly what he did. And the Winnipeg Jets deeply respect that. But we'll see. I mean, you know, Rick Tocchet's still out there. I think he's a good coach. I think he's going to be a nice ad for someone. You know, Jeff Blassel's name has been out there. I wonder about a veteran guy like Rick Bonus. I mean, I don't think Winnipeg has any idea other than they're still in the process.
Well, Dregs, it was a fantastic season. I believe this is the last hit that we'll have with you for the week, so I want to appreciate you. And before you go, actually, might as well give you the floor. Is there any breaking news you want to give us?
Don't think so.
Going to the driving range today.
I was just trying to
report it. Darren Dreger going to play 18 today. Twilight
no,
round.
No, you know what? I'm actually jumping in the car with my son, Mason. We're going to fishing store.
Oh, there you go.
We're heading west to our place in Manitoba in a couple of weeks. So got a half a day here to get some of my supplies.
Well, this just in, Dreg's picking up some worms. That's the story of the day. Dregs, thank you so much for joining me, and I'm sure we'll chat soon.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
All right. There he goes. TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger. Worth a shot.
Yeah, you never know.
Sure, shoot,
never
you know. Yeah, you never know. He's like, yeah, actually, I just got a text, and looks like so-and-so is going to be heading to wherever. Oh, I got a trade. And I was like, you never know.
That's a
you
nice
know?
Little play. Give the guest the floor every once in a while.
If you got something you want to get off your chest, now is the time.
I've had that a few times where, you know, I call in for a hit, and we just get right into the question. It's like, I had a little something. I had a little flair, a little spice for you, a little anecdote. Yeah, something, but... it's okay. He had nothing for us.
No,
but
not
he,
today.
He had a lot in his head, but just nothing when you open up the floor.
No, he's going with his son, going to pick up some worms and some what do they call those things? Jigs or whatever.
Jigs. I wasn't a big fishing guy. You're a fishing guy.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fishing guy. I wasn't a big
Carlo.
Fishing guy.
Talk to Carlo about that.
Carlo.
Big fishing guy on the golf course.
Dude, how embarrassed are you when you hit the course with that guy and he pulls out a rod and chucks it into
he
the river?
He hasn't done it with me. He hasn't done it.
Oh, God. Yeah. You're lucky. You've been spared, apparently. why don't we get into this discussion about, like, what the Leafs D pairings could look like
going
into next
year.
Let's talk about that on
the other side. There's some question marks there.
I think there are, because to me, I look at the top four, it looks a little bleak. I feel like there might have to be some moves or some tinkering.
I feel like it's the composition of it, too, but we'll get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it on the other side. I'm Mike DiStefano, Al's brother with Frank Corrado. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Yes, I'm super happy. I think 2 years was what we were hoping for. Kind of gives you, you know, 2 years to develop even more. And that was what we wanted. And I'm happy to get 2 years.
Timothy Liljegren signing a 2-year extension with the Toronto Maple Leafs yesterday. That makes it 6 Maple Leafs currently under contract, 6 NHL defensemen under contract for the Leafs. I'm Mike DiStefano, got Frank Corrado with me, former Maple Leafs defenseman. And we were kind of talking about this earlier today and you know, trying just to figure out if this defensive core is good enough. Like, what do the pairings look like at this point? Like, you got 6 guys. It looks nice. Yeah. Like, these players, like, they're NHL caliber players. But it gets a little murky when you try and put them together and you see if, what fits you could make. And if this is, like, when you look at what we just saw in the Stanley Cup final, is this a decor that could get it done? You start to have a little bit of questions.
Well, did they get it done? No.
No. I know. But, like, going forward in next year, right? Yes, like, that's the goal. If you think you're this close,
yeah.
Well, is this defense close enough to get it done for you?
So when I look at the composition of it and what could be the composition of it, I have a feeling that they really want, I don't know why I feel this way. I feel like they really want Muzzin and Hall to work out because I feel like that solves some problems for them.
Dude, I never want to see that pairing again.
I know, but I don't necessarily, if they're going to play the way they did last season, it just didn't work together for them. No. It really didn't. But I feel like if that pairing does play well together and if that's a pairing they want to see, then that solves problems for your first and your third because you're looking at a situation where it's Riley and Brody on your top pair, which you liked, and you know it was good, and Morgan Riley had a lot of success. TJ Brody looked good. And then is your third pairing going to be a combination of Liljegren, Giordano, Liljegren, Sandin, Sandin, Giordano? You know what I mean? So maybe there's a little bit of, and we just heard Darren Dreger talking about how Rasmus Sandin, maybe a 4 or 5 year deal. And more money than Liljegren, so why would Sandin be the odd man out in that situation? But Mark Giordano, we know how much he brings to the lineup and the veteran presence and the intangibles that he brings. So there still is question marks, and even with Sandin not under contract now, you have to assume he's going to be back unless they trade him. And the other thing I was thinking too, Al's brother, is if you don't want to trade one of your big four guys and you want to bring someone in to help your team, Sandin's the guy that's going to fetch you the most, isn't he?
He is, and I've, for a while now, I've been kind of thinking, when I saw Giordano sign back, I immediately, my mind went to, well, that might be it for Sandin, because now on the left side, you got Riley, Muzzin, Giordano.
But you have to preface that also by saying that it's not because of Giordano. It's because you're saying, okay, we're going to lock down the left side here for this year, and we're going to use you maybe to acquire something that
you're taking from a position of strength, and you're going to improve a position of weakness to try and balance out your lineup.
Yes.
So you're taking Sandin, and you either turn that into a goaltender, which they are going to be looking for a goalie. Yeah. I mean, obviously, this is not going to be a one-for-one. You're thinking about potential packages. But a goalie, potentially you look for a guy, a right-shot defenseman, because that's where you're looking on the left side. Well, it's a little clogged up there.
And that's
a top-six player.
And that's the thing about the D pairing. So I'm not convinced Timothy Liljegren plays in the top four consistency next year. I think he'll do it out of necessity if you have injuries. But I don't see him. Like, if you want to start the season with Riley and Liljegren as your top pair, I don't like it.
I see Riley Hall as the top pair. If this is the 6 guys that they start next season with game one, I see Riley Hall, Muzzin Brody, Giordano, Liljegren. That's the pairing that I kind of look envision. That's the trio, the pairs that I think that the Maple Leafs would go with, because they ended off the year. Hall jumped up, and Labushkin kind of took a back seat. Hall jumped up into the top pair with Morgan Riley.
I think Labushkin fit a need for the team at the time, and I think that's great. I think if you're
overwhelmed in the playoffs
a little bit, and I think if you're looking at guys who might be out there, maybe there's a guy who has the elements that Labushkin has, but can move the puck a little better,
better. There's a lot of discourse about Chicago starting to tear it down. I keep looking at Connor Murphy as a perfect fit for this team.
That's a good fit.
A perfect fit, a right shot guy who can, you know, move the puck a little bit, plays a solid defensive game, can kill penalties, block shots. He likes to hit. He's a physical guy.
Yeah.
And I think he's making 4.4, so it's not a terrible deal. You know, that's pretty reasonable for a top four defenseman.
Absolutely.
You'd have to move out some money, and potentially that's where you look at, okay, maybe you're looking at a Sandin, and then you also add in a Mrazek, take on that contract while you're getting a quality prospect.
You and
you think pick like, involved.
Do you think if you have Riley, you don't need Sandin? Is that where you're at with it?
Yeah, so I was reading a piece by Jonas Siegel in The Athletic, and he was kind of talking about that as well in a way where if you have... Can you have two guys of the same ilk? When you look at what these behemoths look like in the playoffs and how those defensive teams were built, is it possible to have those smaller puck-moving stature type of players? Do you need a little bit more size and a little bit more grit? And that's
good
where
argument.
You look at
it's a good
it.
Argument. Sandin's a hell of a player. I love the way he moves the puck. I'm a big fan of his, but you just eventually you get to the point with your team where you're like, okay, like we might need just a different element. And
you need a guy who's going to muck it up something. In the corners. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he could get there. You know, potentially he could get there.
Yeah.
We've seen guys who have turned their careers around where they started. I mean, TJ Brody started out as an offensive defenseman.
Yeah.
Right? A good puck-moving defenseman. And now he's considered one of the least best shutdown defensemen.
Yeah.
Right? People evolve. Players evolve. And maybe eventually Sandin can get to that. But I feel like going into next year, he's kind of the odd man looking out on the left side. And unless you can move him to the right, which he has had some experience with, maybe he is used as a trade piece to try and bolster either the right side,
this is somewhere
in the roster.
This is one of those summers for the Leafs. I have no idea what direction they're going to go, and there's quite a few question marks.
Yeah, there is. There definitely is. It'll be interesting to see what direction they go in, but silly season's upon us. We saw one move yesterday, and there'll be plenty moves over the next couple of weeks with the draft coming up right around the corner, and then also free agency a few days after that. All right, coming up in the second hour of today's show, be joined by former Maple Leaf, your teammate, Connor Carrick.
That's right, man.
He's going to join us at 105. And then Eric Erlandson from Tampa Bay. They had their locker clean out today. We'll see what came about from Tampa Bay after losing out in the Stanley Cup Final. All that and more in the second hour of Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.